And Lydia, I understand we have a special guest.
That's right. We have Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. He's a combat decorated U.S. Marine, a TV host, a military historian, a best-selling author. And I think he knows a little something about national security. Welcome, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Great to be with you all again. And also a person way too familiar with a place called Afghanistan.
Mm. Mm. Tell us, what the heck is going on and who calls the shots?
You know,
that's a big question.
Apparently, according to what he said yesterday, the commander-in-chief said the buck stops with him. And if that's true, okay, then we're in deep, serious trouble. And so are tens of thousands of people trying to get out of Afghanistan right now. I mean, the problem was, and he described it very accurately, except that he was describing the wrong thing. I mean, what happened over there was a total failure of preparation for the kinds of things that are now happening right in front of our eyes. And I've spent the better part of the last 72 hours on the phone with people who I know who are trying to get out. Some of them are Americans. Many of them are Afghans who helped us. And they have no way of getting through the cordon that has been established by the Taliban. When Mr. Biden said in his remarks that, quote, "This happened a lot faster than we thought it would," That there's a hint in right there in all of that. It unfolded faster than we expected, is the way he put it. Mm. So what's unfolded? A Taliban seizure of the country. Did they really expect that, going all the way back to when these conversations with the Taliban began back in the last administration? Did he do anything at all in preparation? Remember, I'm not sure if he remembers, but we know that he came to office in January. The election was in November. He came to office in January. What transpired between January and what's now transpiring now in conversations with the Taliban? Treating them like they were a legitimate force to be reckoned with, I guess, which, quite frankly, is beyond what I thought would be a wise thing to do way back when it started in the last administration. But in any event, what did they do to prepare? Apparently, what they started to do was to shut down every U.S. base and get the hell out of Dodge, forgetting that perhaps there are probably in round numbers over 150,000 people who had been working with us closely on the Afghan government. Some of them were military, some of them were police, some of them were intelligence, some of them were medics, some of them were running hospitals, some of them were pumping out porta potties, for crying out loud, all over the base for 20 years, all over the place for 20 years. And they were just going to walk out and leave him? And I have to give Mike Waltz, who is a congressman from the 6th District of Florida, a lot of credit, because he and I first met on the battlefield over there when he was a special forces officer. And he and I have stayed close. And so when all this balloon first started to come apart over a month ago, he and I had some conversations about, how about the Terps? Here's my list of 19 Terps that I used, Ollie North, as a Fox News correspondent and covering the war. And what's being done to get them out? And, of course, I don't know if you've heard Mike on Fox over the course of the last several days, but Mike has described what happened to his TERP once they found out who he was. Mm. And the Taliban have a great network of intelligence operatives, as almost all good big terrorist organizations do. And what they found him. They went to his place, found his documents, brought him back to his home, and beheaded him in front of his wife and children.
Oh, my God.
And so where we are, John, is we're now in a situation where there are literally tens of thousands, if not over 100,000, people in that same predicament and absolutely no capacity for bringing it out. Now, we'll commit news right now. In the Milley Austin press conference, which is a joke in many respects, certainly the way the Secretary of Defense presented it. I mean, you and I have been around long enough to see lots of Secretaries of Defense give lots of briefings. That was terrible. And Milley was not much better. And he gave away a little secret in the middle of it. He acknowledged that they're no longer able to use the ATC system for instrument landings. He said that right in the, I'm paraphrasing it, but you go back and you play that little sound bite. It's rolled right into a, well, we've got some challenges here, you know. Some of it's the weather and some of it's crowds of people. And he lodges that right in the midst of that. What that means is, in aircraft, in pilot parlance, in airplane parlance, it means that you can no longer have a half-mile or a one-mile separation between aircraft coming in from Turkey and UAE and some flying all the way from the States. You can't do it with a half-mile separation. You now have to have visual recognition, which means miles of separation and in altitude and in distance, and which delays everything, both coming and going out of the country, into the country and out of the country.
But who's the general in charge of Afghanistan right now?
We've got 7,000, I guess, in round numbers right now. They said 6,500, I think, in the press conference. But we'll have around 7,000. And one of the things that's got to change, for example, he explained why they gave up the best air base in the country. Because they didn't have enough people to defend Bagram and the embassy. Well, the answer to that is get more people, get more things. Get more airplanes. Get whatever the hell you need to do it, but don't give up the best air base in the country. And the second best air base in the country was down in Helmand province, and that was a place called Leatherneck Bastion. And Lashkargah and Mazar-e-Sharif and Jalalabad all had American-built bases, and all the Americans pulled out, took a lot of their gear with them, particularly communications equipment, in the middle of the night. What a terrible, terrible way to do it. And finally, let me just make the observation that I've made it several times as I've done these TV over the course of the last several days. When the president of the United States accuses a foreign army who has allied with us of being unwilling to fight, first of all, he lied, okay? Since 2014, when the Afghan army went to the field and began the process of we'll come in and we'll take over this base, and the advisors would stay with them. Since 2014 till right now, over 66,000 Afghan troops and police officers and security people have been murdered, killed in action. And there's over 50,000 of them who've been hurt or wounded. I mean, wouldn't fight. Dear Lord, I was made two trips to the Vietnam War. We didn't lose that many people in the whole Vietnam War. And these guys have actually been fighting in the field since 2014. Now, what an incredible insult. Now, he can say what he wants about Ghani, but Ghani fled the country because he knew he was on the target list. As far as I know, right now, Abdullah is still, the vice president, is still in country. There are partisan groups already forming around the country. Who's going to be around to support them? And I have had a little experience with that, as we know, when I was a little bit younger. Mm-hmm. But the partisan groups are made up of little cadre of usually guys from the special forces, and I knew many of those guys. I went on operations with those guys, and MARSOC units and Army Special Forces units and Navy SEALs ran those kinds of operations all the time, accompanying those special operations troops of the Afghan government.
Colonel, what can we do now?
Pray, and I'm not joking. We need to pray for those guys on the ground. We need to pray for our country with the kind of leadership we've got.
What are you hearing from the people that you know who you want to hear from?
Well, the guys who are talking to me from Afghanistan are desperate. I mean, they'll call me up with a name and say, here's where he is. Here's his phone number. We have no way of getting this guy through the perimeter that the Afghans have established around the airfield.
How many troops do we still have in the ground, do you think?
It looks somewhere in the neighborhood, if you believe what Millie and Austin were saying, they've got, of the 7,000 that they're allowed to get, which would include the original cadre that was there, they've got almost all of them. Unfortunately, they don't have all the equipment they need, because clearly, if the air traffic control system, the United States Air Force has an entire unit that does this kind of thing. They open up airfields and they control aircraft. And why that isn't working, I don't know yet. But I will by the end of the night, I'm sure.
This is a breakdown of a. I mean, if you can't fight the Taliban, who are you going to fight? The Chinese? Are you going to fight the Russians?
Well, at least we'll have established that we've got really good social justice warriors. Remember that, and they've been taught now about, you know, critical race theory, and they've been caught talk about gender analysis and all this other garbage. But God help us if this is what's happening to our military. We're, in fact, I think the last time you and I talked, one of the things that's happening in our military today is recruiting is way down. The we're losing really good, experienced junior officers and senior NCOs because they're getting out. And once you've lost the cohesion of those units, who are now supposed to look behind their backs because, by the way, if the guy that's got my back is not my color, then things could go upside down very quickly, right? That's the kind of thing that damages the military as much as an embarrassment like this. This is far worse in many respects because it's damaging to the credibility of the United States of America. If you're a Taiwanese soldier today wondering, will the Americans really honor the treaty that they've got with us? If you're a South Korean and you're looking across the border and you remember back to June 25th, 1950, are you thinking, will the Americans really fight this time? I mean, if anywhere in the world. Our credibility is smashed by this. That's why I say, in many respects, it's as bad as what happened on the 30th of April, 1975 in Saigon. This is the Biden moment is Saigon. This is it.
Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, thank you so much for everything you've done for our country. And
God bless you,
continue
buddy.
To
pray for our country. And pray for our soldiers and
Marines. I'm praying because I know this is a bad situation. And your new book?
Yeah, tell us, please, about your new book, Colonel.
Well, it's We Didn't Fight for Socialism. And I'll tell you, it's flying off the shelves because this is the 500 veterans that we interviewed. Here's what they're saying about the crowd that's running this country right now. And these are guys who, when they looked at it, Biden hadn't even come into office yet. They knew what was going to come if he got there. And this is these guys who are professionals. Some of them served in the Vietnam War. Some of them served in this war. And these are bright, smart, tough young Americans. And they're looking at it and they're saying, we didn't fight for socialism. Many of them are calling back up to David Koch and I and saying, hey, we didn't fight to lose either, as a consequence of what this is. It's a great read about, and it's a primer on what we the people need to do to fix it. And of course, what we need to do to fix it first is get the House of Representatives back in the other party's hands, and number two, get the Senate, and number three, remember, there's going to be a presidential election in 2024.
Again, the Colonel's book, We Didn't Fight for Socialism. Where can we get your book? And we all know when you go woke, you go weak. So this is
go it's Amazon. You can get it anywhere. Go to olivernorth.com and you can order it right there.
Thank you, Colonel. And let's go to a break.